Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Okay, Ryan, let's jump into it. Dune Part 2 came out this past weekend, and from everything that I've been able to glean, I'm very much not in the box office world like you are, but this seems like a pretty big deal that this movie came out and it's doing well. So how well is this movie performing so far?
Yeah, it is indeed a big deal. And just for some context, you and I have, I think even going back to what, November, December of last year, when we did that sort of 2024 preview episode, we were like, things look bad. And this was kind of the movie we were looking to of like, things don't look good until Dune Part 2 arrives. So let's talk about how it did and how good it actually was. So let's go over the numbers very quickly. Dune Part 2 opened to $82.5 million domestically, which was a stellar $20,200 per screen average. It also opened to $100 million internationally. So it's at about 189 worldwide, I think, is what today's numbers are factored in and everything as well. Mm-hmm. So it's doing exceptionally well. And like, just to give some context here, the first Dune, which opened in 2021, opened to $41 million. Now, it was also available on HBO Max. The pandemic was a much bigger factor at that time, but Dune Part 2 domestically at least effectively doubled what the first movie brought in, which is rare air. You know, you're talking sequels that have done similar stuff, you know, John Wick Chapter 2, The Dark Knight, Across the Spider-Verse. Now, the latter two there did more than double, but it's good company to be in. It's very good company to be in.
Certainly.
So, yeah, it's great. I mean, the movie, yes, it has a $190 million budget, but at this point, it's kind of hard to imagine it would finish with, you know, less than 550 worldwide. It's probably going to be a lot closer to 600. So, you know, the first one finished with 400 million worldwide. And, you know, because of the second one coming out, they re-released that. It made another $30 million. So you can kind of chalk that $30 million up to Part 2 as well in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, I mean, this is ultimately a huge success. It is a cinema score, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 95% audience score. Every indicator we have says this is going to hold very well. It should have good legs. Word of mouth is going to be good. It made 48% of its money from premium format screens, which means people are willing to pay and are seeking out premium tickets for this, which also is good news for legs, because IMAX's CEO was literally like, we would have made more money, but we just ran out of seats. So yeah, I mean, every indicator here is great.
Can we just like take a minute and bask in this for a second, Ryan? Because it just feels so good to have a really good movie that is B, performing really well at the box office again. You know, it feels like it's become so rare over the past few months that I would just like to just sit in this for a second.
It's been a minute. I mean, just to add a little more context, it's the biggest domestic opening since Taylor Swift the Eras Tour back in October. And it's also the biggest global opening since Barbie and or Oppenheimer back in July of last year. Now, those two movies were juggernauts and combined made, you know, a fortune. But also interesting is Dune Part 2 made essentially the exact same amount as Oppenheimer did on its opening weekend. So, yeah, that bodes well. And it's interesting, too, because, you know, Dune is a very I said on another podcast and I've said it online. Dune is not really for me, but I cannot deny that they are phenomenally made movies. And the fact that these movies are out there making good money, I'm very encouraged by that. I don't care that I didn't love it. I'm with you. This is great to see. as it means, you know, Denis going to get a bag to make whatever he wants next. It means, you know, Warner Brothers, other studios are going to be encouraged to do stuff like this. I'm all for this. I'm with you. It's great news.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things, I guess before we move on from Dune, is there anything else that you think is worth mentioning right now? I'm sure we're going to be checking in on this movie and its performance over the next few weeks or whatever, but is there anything else that you think you should say about it now?
Yeah, I mean, we will. I mean, look, here's the thing. We will talk about this more, and because it's probably going to top the box office this upcoming weekend, which also sees Kung Fu Panda 4 and Blumhouse's Imaginary coming out. But, you know, so yeah. So, I mean, we're going to talk about this a lot. But I think that it cannot be overstated that this is a movie that defied conventional blockbuster logic. You know, of the Marvel method of making a blockbuster. And this was not that. And yet it is finding its audience in a big, bad way. Yeah. You know, I think that's important. And it also, you know, Warner Brothers wisely got the first Dune on Netflix a few weeks ago to allow people to catch up with it. There's no question in my mind that that helped goose the numbers. Mm-hmm. Because people, you know, it's one movie to catch up with. They don't have a whole franchise to catch up with. You can watch one movie. Hell, you could do that the night before the screening. So I think that that's important that, you know, the whole exclusivity and holding it behind the HBO Max wall, probably like the lack of exclusivity there probably helped, you know, and it speaks volumes about how much people liked the first movie. So I think it's more or less assured that Dune Messiah, which is, would be the third movie, is going to happen. It's just a matter of when and when they decide to announce it.
So speaking of messiahs, you have an article going up on Slash Film called An Unlikely Savior Has Emerged at the Box Office. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and this is something you and I have touched on in recent weeks, so it shouldn't come as a super big surprise, but TV shows are continuing to make money at the box office. The Chosen season 4, which has been distributed by Fathom Events, is now coming up on $30 million for the episodes that have been released through season 4. Fathom Events is releasing them in little chunks. This weekend, for example, we had the Chosen season four, episodes 7 and 8. Those made $3.2 million over the weekend and have made $4.5 million overall. So, you know, these are not, they're not gigantic numbers, but they're not nothing either. And mm-hmm. $30 million over the last month is not nothing. You also have the latest Demon Slayer movie, which we talked about, that is actually just several episodes of the show stitched together to make a feature. That is approaching $16 million. Now, yes, Demon Slayer dropped 82% this weekend, but that's to be expected. What Crunchyroll does, they find a weekend slot where they can put these little anime movies in, they make their money, they walk away. It's essentially free money. So if you were to look at an entire calendar year at this point, and look at what these TV shows repurposed as movies or cinematic events are pulling in, it's relatively significant. And I think there is a strong argument to be made that other franchises, other big TV shows should be exploring this as an avenue here. Because you have a couple of niches here with face-based stuff and anime doing it. I don't understand why other stuff isn't doing it, and it's something that should be explored.
And I maybe you have the numbers pulled up in front of you, Ryan, but like, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is not the first time that these Chosen movies have performed pretty well, right? Like, it's not just the fact that comparatively there isn't that much competition, or there hasn't been that much competition at the box office and stuff, right?
They're filling in little gaps where theaters need something. Like we talked about this earlier this year, the first the premiere of The Chosen season 4 was on one of the worst weekends of the box office this year so far, so that helped put about $6 million worth of ticket sales. And there was Christmas with The Chosen in 2021, which I think made almost $14 million overall. And you had the Demon Slayer movie in 2020 when nothing was making any money that made almost $50 million domestically. Wow. You know, so I think that, yeah, there's a lot of evidence that this isn't just a one-off thing. Now, they're not all going to make that much money, but, you know, again, these are pretty small niches, relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, you could, in the article I talk about, I don't understand why Star Wars shows, if you did the season premiere and or the season finale, willing to bet that brings people out. Same thing, like I don't think Netflix would do it, but like Stranger Things season 5, and there are plenty of other big shows that could do this, and I don't really see what any streamer or network has to lose by giving that a shot.
Yeah. Well, I hope that they take your advice and actually follow through on that, especially this year when things are not quite as packed as they've been in you know, certainly pre-pandemic years. So, okay, one more thing before we take a break. Anyone but you, let's check back in on this movie. I think you wrote this article, I want to say it was actually like a week ago today, but we haven't had a chance to really talk about it since then. This movie has been just like quietly chugging along, and your article says that it's hit a huge box office milestone not seen since 2016. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so let's absolutely talk about a movie that, you know, for all these weeks that we were waiting for Dune to arrive and all these weeks where we had so little going on, Anyone But You, this rom-com, an R-rated rom-com, let's be clear. So you're talking about R-rated comedy and rom-com kind of all wrapped into one here, a genre that Netflix presumably had destroyed as a commercially viable option at the box office. Not at all the case. Anyone But You has now made $207 million worldwide. When I wrote this article that you are referencing, it had just crossed the $200 million mark. That is now more than Ticket to Paradise, which starred Julia Roberts and George Clooney, which made $168 million. It's also more than The Lost City, which starred Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum, which made $192 million. Seemingly more bankable, bigger stars than Sydney Sweeney or Glenn Powell. But I think that also goes to, they are now movie stars, and I think that's becoming undeniable.
Yeah.
The Man, 2016. Yeah, it is wild. The 2016 part of this comes into play when this is now the biggest R-rated comedy of any kind, since Bridget Jones's Baby in 2016, which made $211 million. It's the first R-rated comedy to cross that $200 million dollar mark since then. It's incredible. Jeez. So, you know, it's so, yeah, I mean, that's incredible. That's great news. It's I mean, you know, because we got a little down when movies like Bros made like no money, or some of these movies sort of struggled or failed. But it's kind of project dependent. And so, yeah, this is one that really caught on and helped make a case for a couple of new movie stars and helped make a boatload of money, because the thing cost $25 million to make. So, yeah.
So one thing that I'm spraying on you here, but we have not really talked about this on the podcast. I don't know if we've written about it on Slash Film, honestly, because it seems a little too inside baseball. But Dan Lin, who's a producer of a bunch of stuff for Warner Brothers and Disney over the past few years, has been announced as basically the head of the Netflix film division. He's replacing Scott Stuber. We talked about his exit a little while ago. I think with this new direction that Netflix is going to be going in, I think everything that we've heard seems to indicate that they're not going to be shelling out, you know, $200 million for movies like The Gray Man and Red Notice and things like that. And they're going to be going more sort of back to basics and trying to make fewer movies that are better, which sounds easy to do in theory, but is actually pretty difficult to achieve. I'm wondering if you think that Anyone But You's success, I don't know, is there some sort of correlation there between Netflix now being basically having this directive of, all right, let's go back to making movies that don't cost as much, like rom-coms, for example. Do you think the presumed proliferation of more movies like that on Netflix originals might cut into whatever impact Anyone But You is having in the theatrical space right now? Do you think other studios are going to be scared away from Netflix maybe shifting direction a little bit and say, you know what, Anyone But You did perform really well. Maybe that would have led us to try to make our own version of that, but now we're not going to, because Netflix is trying to, you know, retake that corner, so to speak.
No, not at all. Netflix has been making a lot of rom-coms for a long time. You're talking about the Kissing Booth trilogy, the To All the Boys I've Loved Before movies. What was there? The Change Up. There was
Set It Up was the one with Glenn Powell from 2018, right, or something, which was great.
Set It Up, Always Be My Maybe, which I really liked. I mean, this is something they've been doing. They released several of these a year that gained. So I don't, you know, which is why, to my point, I think a lot of people thought this was dead as a theatrical concern. So despite Netflix doing all of that already, you know, Anyone But You is thriving. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that, you know, much in the same way that you know, Netflix can release a big starry blockbuster on their streaming service, but it doesn't prevent, you know, a starry blockbuster in theaters from making any money. If anything, it motivates people to want to see them, you know, like they're like, I would have liked to see this on, you know, on the big screen. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe those, I don't know for sure, but you could maybe make an argument that people watching those rom-coms on Netflix maybe led them to remember how much they like that kind of movie. And then, you know, theaters start opening back up. They're like, oh, hey, might be fun to go do that date night, you know? So yeah, maybe Netflix helped that movie. I don't know, but I don't think it's going to hurt. No.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about a bunch of movie news that happened over the past few days. Okay. One thing I wanted to mention here at the top of this section, Ryan, is Richard Lewis, the comedian and star of Curb Your Enthusiasm, or frequent guest star anyway, has died at the age of 76. Sad loss. And I knew him primarily from his Curb stuff. He had popped up in some movies that I'd seen in the 90s, things like Robin Hood Men in Tights. And he was just a very, very funny guy. Did you have any relationship to the work of Richard Lewis at all?
Not particularly. I'd seen a little bit of his stand-up, and I've never watched Curb, but what I can tell you is that, you know, every once in a while someone dies and it's like, you know, there's the standard level of like, oh wow, what a bummer, you know, you see on social media. There people that were like bummed about this were like, there was a level of it that like his work seemed to really like get people in such a way. Mm-hmm. So I will say there was a noticeable level of that for me when this news came out.
Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm not like super familiar with Lewis and his life story and his, I've never seen his stand up, for example. But Jeremy Smith, who writes for Slash Film, wrote one of the best obituaries that I've read in a long, long, long time. So I would just, I'm going to link to it in the show notes. I encourage anybody who is even like a passing fan of Richard Lewis to read this article, because it does a really great job of explaining, you know, why he was so great and, you know, how he was basically like a comedian's comedian in many ways. And it traces his life and a lot of the big ups and downs that he had over the years. And it's just a really, really great piece. So I just wanted to mention that up at the top. So RIP Richard Lewis. Okay, let's get back into, I guess, more, you know, flimsy news here, Ryan, which is that, or not flimsy, but maybe less serious anyway. James Gunn's Superman Legacy now has a new title, and this was last week, I think this came out, and he shared an image of the super suit, the Superman suit, that was basically just a punched-in version of the sort of S logo. First of all, what is the new title? And then secondly, what do you make of what we can see, anyway, from this first look image?
Yeah, the title is now just simply Superman. You know, it has been pointed out by myself and many others that technically no movie has just been called Superman, because the original 1978 Richard Donner movie was Superman the movie. So this is technically the first time that a movie is just titled Superman. Gunn had said when he posted the image that when I finished the draft of the script, I called the film Superman Legacy. By the time I looked at locked the final draft, it was clear to me the title was Superman. So, you know, I personally think it's a cleaner title. I'm not a big fan of like needless or messy subtitles. So this is okay with me. As far as the suit goes, you can't see a lot. I will say it's not pajamas, right? Like there's a lot of texture to it. The thing that I noticed though is the snow. There's a lot of what looks to be snow on the suit. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there's going to be, is that indicative of, are they going to the Fortress of Solitude? You know, that sort of thing, because Gunn has said it's not going to be an origin story at one point or another. So that was maybe my only thought, but I'm not a big Superman guy. So I don't have a lot of like theorizing or anything I could do. Like if this was a Jurassic Park image, I could monologue for you for 45 minutes on nothing, but you know, I'm not steeped in Superman in that same way. So I don't have a lot of other thoughts.
No, I was just going to say the same thing. I think the Fortress of Solitude thing makes a lot of sense, especially given what Gunn has said about this movie taking place, you know, already in a world where superheroes exist and it's not an origin story. So that seems like a great way to for the main character to sort of get like an exposition dump or like some sort of information download or something like that, where, you know, the audience is on the same page as the hero, without having him, you know, physically have to experience all that origin story stuff at the same time. So
yeah, and he said a lot about like the movie being very optimistic. And like, I think that like having the Fortress of Solitude would sort of speak to that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, yeah, definitely. Okay, so Jared Leto has shared an image from a new movie called Tron: Ares, which has been long in the works or long rumored, but now we have like a first official image from Disney at that. Basically, this movie is like legitimately happening. And once again, this is not really an image that we can do too much theorizing on or anything. It's basically just, I believe it's Jared Leto in costume from behind. And there's a lot of red imagery, very sleek costume. Pretty typical kind of stuff. If you've seen like Tron Legacy, for example, this image should look relatively familiar to you. But I just wanted to use it as an opportunity to ask you, Ryan, like what are your Tron thoughts? Is this like one of your franchises? Are you excited about Tron Ares at all?
I have pretty much no like relationship to Tron. Like I didn't, the original was, I appreciate it for its time. I don't have any nostalgia for it. I wasn't a big fan of the Disney sort of revival of that. Although I do love the soundtrack, you know, the Daft Punk soundtrack, but that's about it. I don't have any real excitement about this. I do know at one point they were going to make a TV show and then that got canceled in favor of the movie, I guess. And I don't know. We'll see. I'm skeptical of this movie's commercial prospects, but we shall see.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm not really excited about it. I especially with, I think it's Joachim Rønning, the Norwegian director of like Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, which is like one of the worst major blockbusters I've seen in a long time, is one of the, is the director of this movie. Hmm. And then
you
the
and I have different feelings on that movie.
Wow. Oh my God, Ryan, don't tell me that you stand for, or that you ride for that movie.
Well, more than some of the other Pirates movies, but not like, you know.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway, not that I felt like, oh, wow, it's like a beautifully directed film or anything, but it gave me a little bit of that Pirates feeling that I missed from the first one. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. We'll maybe we'll rank the Pirates movies one day on the podcast and argue vociferously about that. Anyway, so I would just say, yeah, that and the Jared Leto of it all basically just like brings me to like negative interest in this movie. And then the only thing that I am quasi interested in is Past Lives star Greta Lee is part of the cast here, as is Evan Peters and comedian Hasan Minhaj. Jodie Turner Smith is in this as well. And Gillian Anderson is in this too. So like it has a good supporting cast.
All for Gillian Anderson getting a paycheck. Like please.
Definitely.
Go get your money.
Yeah. So whether or not those people and whatever storyline and whatever first trailer and stuff we see are going to be enough to like overcome my complete apathy otherwise is remains to be seen. But I would love it if like we have any like hardcore Tron fans in our listenership. If you want to like write in and tell me like why I should be excited about Tron Ares, not that it's your job to convince me, I'm just curious like why anyone would be super stoked about this, because it's been so long since the previous movie. I think that came out in 2010, and it just seems like something that Disney has just been kind of like trying to ignore for a long time. And then in the age of like IP is king, I guess they just kind of finally, it feels like a movie that they gave in to making instead of one that they're actually excited about making.
Little bit. It also, the other thing with me is hard to imagine a Tron movie being anything less than very expensive. You know, like it's not the kind of movie that you can make like a mid-budget blockbuster, you know, like you kind of got to spend on this thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. Cause I mean, just for anyone's reference, like Tron Legacy made like 400 million worldwide, which was okay-ish, which is why this movie's kind of lingered in limbo, because it was like that number where it's like it's good but not great, you know. So they haven't really known what to do with it, and mm-hmm. I don't know if Tron's cachet has gone up in the years since that movie came out or if it's gone down, And yeah, it's interesting to see how that goes.
One thing I wanted to mention really quick is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the sequel to Mutant Mayhem, has a date now, which is October 9th of 2026. There's not really much more we can add to that right now. Basically, all we know is that Shredder is going to be the villain. Jeff Rowe, the director, was talking a lot about that in the during the press cycle of the first film. So I don't know. Do you have any Ninja Turtles thoughts, Ryan? I know you and I both loved that previous movie. So
cannot wait. I will say I think 2026 is a little later than any of us wanted, but I'm also happy that they're not rushing it. And we do have that 2-season series that's going to head to Paramount Plus that sort of takes place between the movies.
Yeah.
And that might be enough to get me to subscribe to Paramount Plus. I am over the moon about this. I cannot wait for this movie.
Yeah. Okay. So the last news story here is that Disney Plus is sending Obi-Wan Kenobi, Andor, Moon Knight, and I think at least one other show, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, to 4K and Blu-ray, which is exciting news for physical media collectors. I think this pairs well with the news that we were talking about not too long ago of like the folks at Sony essentially taking over for the home video production of the stuff that Disney is going to be doing. So I know that you are very much like an acolyte of physical media, Ryan, and a champion of that kind of thing. So I have to assume this is good news in your mind.
It's great. And I was literally just yesterday thinking about, because I kind of want to rewatch Andor, but I'm like, man, I wonder if they're going to do the 4K, because the Mandalorian, I haven't finished all of it yet, but I picked up those 4Ks and it really does make a difference. Like, you know, when the blacks are really black and you don't have that grainy digital thing that you could, that my girlfriend hates me now because I pointed that out to her once. I don't know if you've noticed when you're watching something that is digitally compressed, even if it's supposedly in 4K, the black is very blocky. And she now is like, every time she's like, damn it, I can't not see that now. And I'm like, well, you know, sorry.
You're so now afflicted with the same curse I'm afflicted
with. Yeah. And so I'm very, I got to tell you, I One Way Out is maybe my favorite episode of television of all time. And I cannot wait to get my hands on that, to pop that in. But yeah, I think that these must have been in the works for a little bit, but also I don't know how long it takes to get this stuff manufactured, whatever, but it is to me a good sign that Disney, even before handing it off to Sony, was not just resting on the laurels of the ones they tested the waters with. They're like, no, this worked. Let's go ahead and keep doing this. Yeah. So I think it's a good sign for things that, you know, either are going directly to Hulu or directly to Disney Plus, that yeah, you will maybe in due time get these things released, and it gives me hope for a Barbarian Blu-ray at some point. And I think it's great news. I think it's awesome.
So one of the things that people probably should not hold out hope for, though, is Obi-Wan Kenobi season 2. Why is that?
Yeah, so this was not, there's been a lot of talk, like Ewan McGregor has said multiple times that he would be happy to come back and do Obi-Wan again, particularly a second season. It was more or less billed as a limited series when it came out, but they never really definitively said that. But so this announcement today included Obi-Wan Kenobi, Andor, Moon Knight, and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Andor, Moon Knight, and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier were billed as the complete first season, whereas Obi-Wan Kenobi was billed as the complete series. So not to say that they couldn't change their mind, not to say that something else couldn't happen with Ewan McGregor down the line, but this pretty much puts the nail on the coffin for Obi-Wan Kenobi season 2, because they are releasing this as the complete series.
So. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you think that it's likely, or if you would even be interested in seeing Ewan McGregor come back for something that is not Obi-Wan season 2, like reprise that role in some other form as like a supporting character in a different series, a different Star Wars series entirely. Is that something you'd be interested in at this point? Or do you think like, all right, Obi-Wan, he's done it. He like did what he said he wanted to do all those years ago and came back and reprised the role again. And like, he should just bow out gracefully at this point.
I'm strongly in the camp of, I wish this had been a movie. I think Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi might be like one of the single best actor character performances in Star Wars as a whole. He raises the entire, think what you will about the prequels, they're better for him being in it. I was not a I was pretty let down by Obi-Wan Kenobi as a whole show, but if they're like Ewan McGregor's coming back for something, I don't know what. I would absolutely watch him do more Obi-Wan, and I would almost be more interested if it wasn't just a second season of the show. So I'm open to that.
Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of them in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to our newsletter. There is a link for that in the show notes as well. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot in terms of visibility. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.